From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
North Oakland.
Temescal.
Alamo Square.
I live in Noe Valley.
Corona Heights.
Western Addition.
I live in North Oakland, right by MacArthur BART Station.
Coming up, we start our series about teaching kids with learning disabilities.
I just remember going in there and feeling like I had to survive. How do I get, you know, the kids to be able to learn?
Then we talk with the head of San Francisco schools about the state of special education.
My comrades from the special ed world are like, you need to fix that, you know, and I'm saying, well, you know, there's not a lot of money to do that right now.
A conversation with San Francisco Unified School District Board President Rachel Norton.
You know, we take everyone who comes and with whatever needs and challenges they have.
We're being schooled on today's Cross Currents.
I'm like a ship that's lost, can't navigate. Can't find my favorite passage on the page. So we thought for a minute, took a long look. Then that dude invented the book. And you can do it too. Your mind's free, just think what two kids require and need.
What you just heard isn't a show from some new underground San Francisco rap group. It's not a single from Will Smith's comeback album or the soundtrack to Step Up 4. Nope, this was recorded in Oakland at Elmhurst Community Prep Middle School. And this isn't just any classroom, it's a special education classroom. You're listening to a song chock full of this week's vocabulary words.
Candy juice, why the sidewalk moves? Tell me that's not cool, yo.
10% of all California students are in some kind of special ed program. This week, we're looking at how they get their education. KALW's Christine Stolakis joined a special ed teacher in East Oakland who, after finishing her flowcabulary lesson, of course, shared her story.
Stevie Evans has been a special education teacher for 4 years.
I feel like when I first started this job, I was just thrown into the lion's den. They're just like, all right. I mean, I came into teaching through Teach for America, and they really prepare you well for teaching. For a special day class, I don't know if anyone could prepare you for that. I mean, that is just a different ballgame. I just remember going in there and feeling like I had to survive. It was like a matter of me surviving. So it was like, how do I survive? Like, how do I get, you know, the kids to be able to learn?
We're at Elmhurst Community Prep, a small middle school in East Oakland.
Teachers, you wear a different hat all the time. You're, you know, one day you're a teacher. You're a psychologist. You're a police officer. You're a mom. You're a nurse, you're a social worker, you're just like, that's just part of the job.
All right, Trayvon, Johnny, Isaiah, Raheem, Michaela, read them together on three, okay? When I point to them,
I want to do it by myself.
One, two, three.
Navigate. Require.
Kids come to special education for really diverse reasons. Their challenges can range from autism to severe emotional disturbances. Just within Stevie's class, she has kids with ADHD, auditory and processing deficits, and intellectual disability.
We're like this little dysfunctional family, and sometimes we get along great.
But like I've got kids who don't have phonemic awareness, which is something you develop in kindergarten. And then I have kids who can read fluently with ease. You know, and like a fifth grade or a sixth grade text. So they're on radically different reading levels. So I am not going to teach them the same thing, period.
What these kids do have in common is that general education does not quite work for them. And Stevie sees her purpose as leveling the playing field, not just for these kids during school, but for their lives in general.
When I think about how do we change things and how do we empower people and how do we get rid of poverty, I mean, I see education as being number one. Every day, I see the work that I do as part of a larger scheme. And although I'm not at the top down, I'm, you know, at the bottom, and I love it. Like, that's where you got to roll up your sleeves and just get it done. So I see it as part of a larger equation. I'm just one of the important pieces, you know?
Getting this done on a day-to-day can be hard. Special day classes have kids of all ages. Stevie's range from 11 to 15 years old. And on top of this, she's also teaching content from all subjects, content usually taught by five or more different middle school teachers. This changes the nature of Stevie's teaching entirely.
When you hear the word in the video, what are you going to do? Who wants to put their arms up?
Nobody.
Okay, put their arms up. Who wants to pat on the desk?
Nobody.
A huge part of my job is all social, emotional, behavioral. I can't just focus on the academics. It's not what the job entails, you know? There's just, it's all encompassing.
And it can produce a chaotic classroom.
Miss Evans, did nobody tell me that we were going to go on a field trip with the seventh graders?
Who?
The seventh graders.
Who?
The seventh graders.
Go to your center!
Stevie isn't alone in all of this. Special needs teachers often have assistants throughout the day. Here, it's Sherry Jackson. She grew up in the neighborhood around Elmhurst.
I graduated from this school. My whole family didn't grab my kids. Everybody. It's a pretty rough neighborhood.
It's not that there isn't a lot of community here, she says, but there is violence.
You know, the shooting, it's a lot of that that goes around here. The car racing that goes up and down the street. It's just a lot of nonsense, really.
Last year, Oakland's homicide rate was the highest it's been since 2006, more than 130 murders. 18 of those occurred within a mile of Elmhurst Community Prep. Two occurred within a block of this school of 352 kids.
They might be explosive one day, and I'm like, they're just a hot mess. And then I talk to them, and it's like, well, my uncle got shot yesterday. I'm mad.
And Stevie's class reflects other issues that exist outside of Elmhurst's walls.
My school now, it's about 70% Latino, 30% African-American. But in my class, it's well over 90% African-American boys. I mean, there's something wrong with that.
The makeup of Stevie's class is a stark example of a national reality. Black children are more than twice as likely to be identified as having a disability as white students, and they're more than three times more likely than all other students to be classified as having mental retardation. This pattern has been observed for decades.
It's not that black boys are just prone to have learning disabilities or dumber than other races. It's like, that's ludicrous. We've already proven that that's not what it is. So what is it then? It's something that's institutionalized and so systematized that people don't see it.
This problem has been discussed by groups ranging from the U.S. Department of Education to the NAACP. In fact, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act now includes a provision which allows the federal government to monitor and manage this over-identification of minority students in special ed. Stevie thinks it's not enough.
You know, it's like, you know that there's injustices in our society, but then you get in someplace that just highlights all of it, and you're just like, whoa.
You might think all these big picture challenges stemming from outside the classroom would encourage these kids to be nice to each other inside. That's not the case. These kids are made fun of a lot outside of class, perhaps for one kid's stutter or how another's eyes look because of fetal alcohol syndrome. As Stevie explains to me, and I see during her class, when these kids are bullied so much, they often become bullies to one another.
I don't
care. I just don't care. I don't care. I don't want to be bothered with no little boy like you.
That is probably, that's just a big part of my job that I didn't really see coming.
Well, I need to buy back. I want to tell you what to do with yourself.
To deal with all of this, Stevie employs two things, a lot of humor and a lot of structure. So while at first she jokes about the rules of her vocabulary exercise...
Who wants to get a dollar for it? Ooh. Okay, no, I'm just joking.
No, you're not. No, you're not.
That's not
going
to happen. All right.
She then starts hyper-organizing every piece of the kids' day.
This is reading centers. This group is working on, like, decoding and fluency. Those other two groups are working on comprehension.
The day is a constant stream of seating assignments, teams, and exercises. There is absolutely no downtime. Just high expectations. Even the act of saying good job is turned into something she refers to as a positive reinforcement structure. When the class does something good, like sitting in their seats quietly during a transition, she starts placing individual marbles into a jar.
25, right here. If you don't know one of those words, ask me now, because we're about to play a game.
You have to have a really well-structured environment in order to meet all their needs. It's amazing because the kids really thrive when there's structure, when there's things that they can count on, when it's really consistent and predictable. It lowers their anxiety. And for kids who have a lot of anxiety for whatever reason, it makes things go a lot smoother when they know exactly what to expect.
Me giving points, but during this time you can earn points or lose points. Go ahead and close your eyes. This is your time to relax your mind.
Even though Stevie got into this work to fight for social justice, she plans to continue teaching for the rest of her life because of a newer passion, her love for her kids.
And take your first really deep breath in. Breathe in.
In East Oakland, I'm Christine Stelakis for Cross Currents.
And breathe out.
If you have experience with your school's special education program, we want to hear about it. Is it working well for you and your child? Comment on this story online at kalw.org. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. As we consider the world of special education, we wanted to hear from school administrators, the people who help determine where district dollars go. Right now, sequestration threatens to cut millions of dollars in funding for special ed. In San Francisco, that means a cut of roughly $3.8 million in federal funds starting this fall. That funding was previously used for child nutrition and early education programs, and it now needs to be found somewhere else in the district's already tight budget. But when we spoke to Rachel Norton, president of the San Francisco Unified School District, we found a perspective a lot more complex than just dollars and cents. Rachel is the mother of an autistic child and a longtime activist for students with disabilities. These issues led her to run for the board in 2009, and she continues to focus a fair amount of her board time on how the district treats and understands kids with special needs. SFUSD Board President Rachel Norton sat down with KALW's Christine Stelakis.
Could you speak about how you got into this in the first place? Because it does sound like it came from a personal place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, so once you realize that you are now the parent of a child with a disability, however that information comes to you, one of the first things that you need to start doing is to advocate for your child. Particularly in San Francisco, this is now sort of going back maybe to 2005, 2006, something like that. Our schools were not particularly inclusive of students with disabilities. Most of our students, I just looked back, I think it was 65% of our schools actually did not allow students to be fully included, students with disabilities to be fully included, meaning in the mainstream 100% of the time with the kinds of supports that they needed to be successful. They did not allow that. They allowed some mainstreaming, but when they had students with disabilities, they were placed, their formal home placement was a self-contained special education classroom. So that was really astounding and shocking to me when I found that out. And sort of that became the burning fire in my advocacy. Like, we need to change that. We need to have more inclusive schools. We need to expand full inclusion here in San Francisco.
For someone who's never heard of inclusion or general ed versus special ed, and then this kind of space in the middle, which is inclusion, could you speak to what those different
ways of approaching special ed are?
Sure. So general education is what we think of school, public school. That's everybody. That's, you know, your child goes off to school and sits in a classroom with 20 other kids and there's a teacher. But about 10% of students nationwide have some sort of disability which qualifies them for what we call special education. They have a right to an appropriate educational program in what they call, what is defined as the least restrictive environment. And the least restrictive environment can be many things, but in general, it's general education. So it means that my daughter with autism has a right to be in a general education classroom and receive in that placement supports and services in the classroom that allow her to benefit from the education that's being provided there.
Are there ever moments when you doubt her being in inclusion? Has she had any challenges?
Yes, she has. I mean, the advantage to a self-contained classroom is that it's very safe. It's very safe. And, you know, particularly students with autism in particular, although students with lots of challenges can be targets for bullies. So I worry about that a lot. She's very gullible. She's very naive. She always says, "Mom, I'm so gullible. Why am I so gullible?" So I do worry about, you know, her being taken advantage of and in a bigger, more rough and tumble environment. But she is progressing and she's doing well. She's doing well academically. And I think being in a classroom where the expectations for her are the same as for everybody else is a powerful thing.
I imagine that can be a hard thing at the school level to implement sometimes. I mean, are teachers who teach general education classes given specific training to deal with inclusion?
No. And that's a big problem. And I think it's an area that has been probably the toughest area in our district to grapple with. My own personal feeling is that it's less about a set of skills than it is about a different mindset, right? That I think that teachers who are able to approach their classrooms as saying, this is a room full of 20 individuals, each of whom has their own strengths and challenges. And so I need to design lessons that have lots of different entry points. I think too often inclusion is sort of thought of as we have to make the kid fit in the classroom. And that's actually not what the law says. The law says you need to make the classroom fit the child.
And are those kids able to get the same level of academic instruction in those classes with inclusion?
I would think so, yeah. I mean, I think, again, that that teachers need support, right? You know, while I don't think the question's intended is, you know, it rankles a little bit because it depends on different, you know, like you wouldn't say, we have a big achievement gap for African-American students in this district. You wouldn't say, well, does teaching Black students take away from the needs of other students? No. So, you know, these are our students. All of our students are all of our students. And we're public schools and we don't get to pick our students. That's what, you know, we take everyone who comes and with whatever needs and challenges they have. And so if we don't have the strategies to teach everybody who lands in our classrooms, well, let's figure out how we need to do that so that we do have that.
That's Rachel Norton, president of the board of the San Francisco Unified School District. So you mentioned that as a parent, you need to fight a little bit for your kids' interests.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Why? Because a parent knows their child best. And I don't mean to accuse anybody of not caring about kids or not wanting the best for kids. I think everybody, you don't go into this work if you don't care about kids and you don't want the best for them. But there are also realities about budget. The lion's share of special education funding comes from the federal government. So, well, not the lion's share, but it's supposed to. The law says that the federal government will pay 40% of the cost of the extra cost of educating a child with a disability, because it does cost more. It requires more physical attention. It requires more equipment, more training, you know, all that kind of stuff. So the law says that the government, the federal government, will pay that amount, but they never have. They don't appropriate that amount of money. So special educators are always very cognizant of that. And that was one of the reasons why the school board was not particularly, you know, because their perception on special ed was that it was, we used to call that shortfall the encroachment, that was special ed encroaching on the general ed budget. There are a lot of people find that term offensive, and we've banned it in the district because, after all, you know, if you have a child with special needs and a typical child, as I do, I don't say that the child with special needs encroaches on the needs of the other. So why would I characterize it that way in the school district? But it did create a mindset where there's pressure on the budget. So you're always watching the bottom line because you don't want that shortfall between, you know, that has to come from the general fund to get too big, right, and take away from other things.
I think something that really struck me about what you bring to the table as the president is your background in advocacy and activism. Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel a conflict being on the board in a more administrative position, knowing what you know, and having to deal with things such as budget cuts or some of the realities mm-hmm. of the day-to-day of running the district?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think, first of all, you know, I'm a board member for the whole district and not just a group of students. So that's really important. And, you know, on the whole, I don't feel it's a conflict, although, you know, certainly there are times where my comrades from the special ed world are like, you need to fix that, you know, and I'm saying, well, you know, there's not a lot of money to do that right now. You know, we don't have the staff to do it right now. I mean, what I think as a board member in general, my role, what I can really contribute is better understanding of just how complex the public education system is, and that from the outside, when you want something to happen, it seems like this should be easy. You know, we should just snap our fingers and do this. But look, it's more complicated than that. You may think it's so easy to just do this, but this other group over here is saying, well, what about that? And you have to balance. The special ed happens against a backdrop of a kind of a litigious backdrop, I guess I would say. And so a big issue is that there are parents that when they don't feel that the services or the program that their child is getting is appropriate, will take a school district to fair hearing, to where an administrative law judge will essentially hear the case, and it's like a court case. And that can be very, very dangerous, or something that districts really fear, because the settlements, if it goes against the district, can be a lot of money. And so, you know, that's why some special educators will tell you, or school district folks will tell you, well, that's why special ed's so expensive, it's all the parent lawsuits. I don't actually subscribe to that view. I think that special ed is expensive because it costs more to provide an individualized service. But I do think that, you know, there is a climate of fear that districts approach this process with, because they want to make sure that they're offering something that is legally defensible. And so it tends to create a more formal and stiff atmosphere than what you might envision as being optimal for the kid. I mean, what you really want is everybody sort of sitting down and looking at the kid's work, thinking about what they've observed, you know, filtering through all the evidence of how does this child learn, what are their needs, and having a creative, you know, problem solving type of conversation about that. Maybe if we did this, what if we did that? Ooh, you know, it'd be so great if we had X service. If a member of the district IEP team says something like that, then the parent can argue
See, the district said this was appropriate, so now they have to pay for it. And so the effect of that is it sort of stifles district personnel, and they're less likely to be flexible and creative about the solutions that they bring to the table because they're scared of the gotcha. And there are professional consequences for them if they make a mistake in an IEP that costs the school district $50,000. And I have personally sat in, you know, because the board has to approve all the settlement. So I see them. And certainly, and sometimes in those conversations, people say, well, who made this mistake? Why did we make this mistake? So, you know, that definitely plays a role. And I think it's something that you need to acknowledge and talk about if you're talking about sort of the whole climate in special ed.
What questions do you have for SFUSD President Norton? Leave them on our feedback line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and you may hear yourself on the air. That's all for today's edition of Cross Currents. The team includes Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Dora Finkelstein, Alyssa Kapnick, Christina Loring, Liz Pfeffer, Mary Reese, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Eva Sonsam. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. They're online at citycarshare.org. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. The sounds you're hearing are by Black Mahal, featuring the godfather of Punjabi American music, Ustad Lai Singh Bhatti. Black Mahal isn't a band, it's an experience. They say they represent the new California feel, hippie hybrid hip hop. You can experience this musical theatrical mashup on Thursday. It's part of this year's Yerba Buena Gardens Festival of Free Music. They'll perform from 12:30 in the afternoon. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.